ladies visited the porch. "You have seen the ring of iron which he wears?" asked Rotri, eating another sweetmeat.
"Yes."
"Know you where he obtained it?"
"I do not."
"Nor I, but I feel we should learn its origin."
"Aye."
"How shall we essay this thing?"
"I have assigned the chore to Tak, who is better suited to the ways of the forest than we. Even now he follows the trail."
Rotri nodded. "Good," she said.
"I have heard," said Yama,
"that the gods do still occasionally visit the more notable palaces of Kama throughout the land, generally in disguise, but sometimes in full power. Is this true?"
"Yes. But a year ago did Lord Indra come to Kaipur. Some 3 years back, the false Krishna made a visit. Of all the celestial party, Krishna the Tireless does cause the greatest consternation among the staff. He stayed for a month of riot, which involved much broken furniture and the services of many physicians. He did near empty the wine cellar and the larder. He played then upon his pipes one night, however, the hearing of which would have been enough to gain the old Krishna forgiveness for near anything. But it was not the true magic we heard that night, for there is only one true Krishna, swart and hairy, his eyes so red and blazing. This one did dance upon the tables, causing much havoc, and his musical accompaniment was insufficient.
Paid he for this carnage with other than a song?"
She laughed. "Come now, Yama, let there be no rhetorical questions between us."
He snorted the smoke.
"Surya, the sun, is now about to be encompassed," said Rotri, staring out and upward. "And Indra slays the dragon. At any moment the rains will arrive." A wave of grayness covered over the monastery. The breeze grew stronger, and the dance of the waters began upon the walls. Like a beaded curtain, the rain covered that open end of the porch at which they stared. Yama poured more tea. Rotri ate another sweetmeat. Tak made his way through the forest. He moved from tree to tree, branch to branch, watching the trail below him. His fur was moist, for the leaves shook small showers down upon him as he passed. Clouds mounted at his back, but the sun of early morning still shone in the eastern sky, and the forest was a swarm of colors in its red-gold light. About him, birds were singing from within the tangle of branches, vines, leaves, and grasses that stood like a wall upon either side of the trail. The birds made their music, insects hummed, and occasionally there was a growl or bark. The foliage was stirred by the wind. Below him, the trail bent sharply, entering a clearing. Tak dropped to the ground, proceeded on foot. At the other side of the clearing, he took to the trees again. Now, he noticed, the trail was running parallel to the mountains, even inclining slightly back in their direction. There was a distant rattle of thunder, and after a time a new breeze came up, cool. He swung on, breaking through moist spider webs, frightening birds into shrieking flurries of bright plumage. The trail continued to move in the direction of the mountains, slowly doubling back upon itself. At times, it met with other hard-packed, yellow trails, dividing, crossing, parting. On these occasions, he descended to the ground and studied the surface markings. Yes, Sam had turned here. Sam had stopped beside this pool to drink. Here, where the orange mushrooms grew taller than a tall man, and wide enough to shelter several from the rains. Now, Sam had taken that branch of the roadway. Here, he had stopped to fix a sandal strap. At this point, he had leaned upon a tree which showed indications of housing a dryad. Tak moved on, about half an hour behind his quarry, as he judged it, so giving him plenty of time to get to wherever he was going and to begin whatever activity so engaged his enthusiasms. A halo of heat lightning reached above the mountains he was now facing. There was another rumble of thunder. The trail headed on up into the foothills, where the forest thinned, and Tack moved on all fours amid tall grasses. It headed steadily upward, and rocky outcroppings became more and more prominent. Still, Sam had passed this way, so Tack followed. Overhead, the pollen-colored bridge of the gods vanished as the clouds rolled steadily eastward. Lightning flashed, and now the thunder followed quickly. The wind came faster here in the open. The grasses bent down before it. The temperature seemed suddenly to plummet. Tack felt the first drops of rain and dashed for the shelter of one of the stands of stone. It ran like a narrow hedge, slightly slanted against the rain. Tack moved along its base as the waters were unleashed and color deserted the world along with the last bit of blue in the sky. A sea of turbulent light appeared overhead, and three times spilled streams that rode crazy crescendo down to splash upon the stone fang curving blackly into the wind, about a quarter mile up the slope. When Tack's vision cleared, he saw that which he did now understand. It was as though each bolt that had fallen had left a part of itself, standing, swaying in the gray air, pulsing fires, despite the wetness that came steadily down upon the ground. Then Tack heard the laughter, or was it a ghost sound left in his ears by the recent thunder? No, it was laughter. Gigantic, unhuman. After a time, there came a howl of rage. Then there was another flash, another rumble, another funnel of fire swayed beside the stone fang. Tack lay still for about 5 minutes. Then it came again, the howl, followed by three bright flashes and the crash. Now there were seven pillars of fire. Dared he approach, skirting these things, spying upon the fang peak from its opposite side? And if he did, and if, as he felt, Sam was somehow involved, what good could he do if the Enlightened One himself could not handle the situation? He had no answer, but he found himself moving forward, crouched low in the damp grass, swinging far to his left. When he was halfway there, it happened again, and 10 of the things towered, red and gold and yellow, drifting and returning, as though their bases were rooted to the ground. He crouched there, wet and shivering, examined his courage, and found it to be a small thing indeed.